CataractCoach.com podcast episode number 39 with Professor Milton Yogi from Brazil. Professor Milton is brilliant. He's of course an incredible ophthalmologist, a very talented surgeon, a great professor, beautiful job at teaching the next generation of surgeons. He's also an artist. He has a huge business expertise. He's a businessman. He's an engineer. He is so many things, an incredibly dynamic man. I've had the pleasure of knowing for almost 20 years. Really a superb podcast. We talk about everything. We talk about his new experience center that he set up for the sole purpose of teaching ophthalmic surgery. And he has a very innovative way of doing it. We'll talk all about that. We look at some of his history. I didn't know he was the ophthalmologist for the F1 racing teams. Incredible. I think you'll really enjoy this. He has a lot to offer, and it's an innovative way and the new way of learning surgery. The old methods, not any good anymore. This is going to be a game changer. Check it out. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. And today we have an incredible ophthalmologist, a very passionate teacher and professor who is teaching in an incredible lab that he set up, and we're going to tell you all about it. Welcome, Professor Dr. Milton Yogi from Brazil. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. My friend of so many years, you've been a beacon in my life today.
It's been a long time. Back when we were both much younger.
Yeah.
Now, I'm noticing in your background here, tell me about this lab you've created. What an experience.
Yeah. Actually, it was launched about a month ago. It is a dream of mine, and also my partner here, Dr. Medea Corradini. She's a young doctor, and you know, I like to follow the young people. Well, it's a training facility. I'm gonna just lightly turn the camera, so sure. It has a vibe here in terms of being a cozy place. It is meant to be cozy, and I would say a very warm place for myself, actually, but also for other doctors and companies. I want to play. I'm 60 now, you know, so I want to play with things I like to do.
So you have there a classroom set up, plus a wet lab station, the phaco machines. Tell me about everything you have there.
Well, actually, in the front end, it would be a training facility. There's also another room with a setup of like an office with equipments like diagnostic equipments. So it's what I love to do most. I love to train people, young or veterans as well. And now they can come to my home. We have training facilities in São Paulo here as well by companies, but I wanted to make something with my experience. So that's why I joined with Dr. Medea, and she also gave this youth vibe to this place. Yes. Yeah, and I love to stay here. Even if I don't have an event programmed, I just come here. I work with my computer here, and I love to be here, actually.
So tell me about the program that you offer.
Well, as I said, it was launched a month ago, the facility, but we also already ran a module here, which was a fake IOL training. Actually, it was amazing because 10 days before, I went to Mendoza in Argentina, and I learned from Dr. Roger Saldivar and his father, Robert Saldivar, a new tool to plan ICL with great predictability. It is an UBM-based software with artificial intelligence called iGuru. And this iGuru was launched, 2 weeks ago. And I was fortunate to have this device in our training as well. Dr. Roger and his team were kindly enough to provide this new tool. And so we also offered this training for our students here. And it was a blast.
Yeah. So that's a very interesting topic, because for ICLs, or posterior chamber phakic IOLs, the vault that you achieve is very important. And so the sizing of the lens, not just dioptric power, but obviously the physical dimensions or sizing of the lens can be a challenge. Because right, mm-hmm. if you get too much of a vault, the AC is too shallow and you're pushing against the iris. Too shallow of a vault, you're rubbing against the anterior lens capsule.
Well, I don't want to spoil the news because it's up to Dr. Zaldívar, Roger Zaldívar and his team. But anyways, he wants me to spread the word as well. So iGuru is a AI software-based system which connects to an UBM. And as this UBM currently on the Sonomed Escalon is already incorporated in the machine, it measures the eye, instantly uploads to the cloud, and gives back a planning, a very nice planning. It's, I saw ICL planning change globally now.
Wow.
It was a blast. Guy Kazirin was at the event, Renato Ambrosio was there, the president of STAR, and so many colleagues from elsewhere because of this launch.
Well, that sounds fantastic. Yeah, amazing innovations coming in ophthalmology. So you had an ICL class there, and you taught that. Yeah. Now, is your classes or your program is for mostly Brazilian ophthalmologists? It is international. What level of training? Beginning resident, senior resident, fellow, what year?
Yeah, in terms of age, I like to cover all of them because I have different offerings for different ages and experiences. But on the other hand, regarding the location, as you may have noticed, I'm traveling a lot, especially in South America, because I consider myself as an ambassador for Brazil, because we have great ophthalmologists here in Brazil. Ophthalmology here in Brazil is awesome. And I want to make more connections among our peers, our neighbors from South America. And I have another news today. It's very interesting. I just partnered with ESASO, which is an European-based training institution located in Poland, in Italy, in Lugano, in Singapore as well. But they were not present in Latin America. So first-hand news, my experience, I'm partnering with ESASO. So ESASO is now Latin America as well. So it's an exciting time.
Yes, our world is getting smaller. We're global now, right? Especially with the electronic ways of teaching, like cataract coach. I mean, Brazil is usually my number two country.
Wow.
For me, it's number one, by most views, is USA, and then number two and three are usually India or Brazil going back and forth. But ophthalmology in Brazil is amazing. I enjoyed very much this past Brascos meeting, the Brazilian cataract refractive meeting in Sao Paulo. I'll be there next May at the same meeting in Rio. Unbelievable. And there you have incredible colleagues. The amount of surgery coming out of Brazil really is cutting edge in such an incredible volume.
Yeah, and you know, the community, the ophthalmic community here is very cohesive. We partner a lot. We have great relations with our peers. The community is not closed. It's all advancing.
Yeah.
Brazilian surgeons love challenges. So I play a lot here in Brazil.
Yeah, for sure. So your courses now, is it open to other people from other countries? Because one of the questions I get asked a lot, I travel a lot, I give a lot of lectures, 12 countries this year. A lot of people say, well, in my home, in my country, in my city, there's not good training. Where can I go to get better at, let's say, phaco chop, or where can I go learn some advanced techniques?
It's amazing because some topics we are talking here, we have not planned, but as you're raising the questions, it happens that I have some answers now. If we were talking a year ago, I wouldn't have the answers, but now, actually, I'm about to start in January and February. My first effort in terms of a scalable hands-on training for surgeons. And I do have almost 30 years of training residents and fellows. I do have started in our institution here in Brazil IPEPO, Instituto da Visão, Vision Institute, which is led by Dr. Rubens Belfort, a global worldwide known name. I'm technical director, and also I was head of the cataracts division. And there I started a hands-on training, but it was a very small scale effort. It has now about 7 years now, but it was because of the setup, it has a very small scale. But now, because of this training facility, I can scale now. I also have in this plan, which will start on January, it's already everything with all the connections already made. We will be offering training for surgery, which is a high demand in Brazil. We have lots of public service needs for cataract surgery, and we have great opportunities for cataract surgeons, but we have to train them. So I will have here the simulation. I will have the theoretical part. It will be a very different training because it will be very, very, very focused. So I can provide results faster. Because of my experience, I can manage to organize something very focused. And it will be first time ever. It will be entirely focused with my shopper, which you know, the hand-in-hand, or we call in Brazil, mãozinha milagrosa, or the yogi chopper. And I want to strip down the training to remove some of the complications. So the surgeons get acquainted with a safe surgery in the fastest manner. There will be also, not here in São Paulo, but elsewhere in Brazil, a training with hands-on, with patients, with all the security and safety net already provided. It's the same structure for training residents as well, but in this case, I'm partnering with them. So it will be very complete. We'll be hyper-focused. It's a dream of mine. So many doctors come to me as they come to you, ask for this specific need, and it's a dream of mine to provide this answer. And you know, now that we're touching in this subject, I rely on training with simulated eyes. And as you know, the community in Brazil is flourishing in terms of innovation, ophthalmology, etc. So I have here a very, I would say, the best simulation for eye training.
This is a model eye then.
Yeah, but you know, I know all the brands, all of the companies. I tested them all. I have it here. But you know, the impressive of this, it's named Orbital. It was developed in Brazil by a young resident. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. She developed it during the pandemic because she felt the need to solve her problem. Wow. And she came with this solution.
Orbital, O-R-B-I-T-A-U, yeah. Orbital. Yeah.
Because her name is Tawani. Yeah, she was a resident 2 years ago, and she developed this eye simulation kit. And she was invited by Dr. Pineda from Harvard to present this model. And they considered it was a great performance, as I consider as well. That's why I'm working with her in terms of trying to perfect some aspects. But actually, I consider it the most realistic phaco simulation nowadays. And that's part of the success of my training, because I had to have something that could provide a complete experience for the training. I wouldn't want to rely on big eyes or a artificial eye that was poor in terms of experience. So this, I would say, this is fake for real.
Wow, that's a neat model. Because yeah, that is one of the challenges when you use a pig eye, a porcine eye in the lab. it's not very realistic. The anatomy is not the same. The tissues aren't the same. And obviously, none of the pigs have cataracts.
The lens I will send you a kit.
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, a great way of doing hands-on right there in a laboratory setting. So I can see behind you, you have some, looks like some surgical microscope set up and some practice heads. So you can put the eye in. And
And you know, I love to be around with young doctors, it's something for them to come here. We have also some sodas. We have some beer as well, because I have no compliance to rely on. So, well, we have some beer. We have discussions here with pizza as well. So it's a fun place to be.
Yeah, I like how you pair with the younger doctors. Yeah. I did the same thing. It keeps you young. Keeps you young at heart.
Absolutely. You was with us at Braskers, and we had a dinner with my fellows and my team, all of them young people, very energetic. It was a blast.
Yeah, it's very collegial. It's like really, I think that's my favorite part of the Brazilian ophthalmology meetings, is they're very collegial, very open. Even an outsider like me, I felt at home. I felt like family.
Yeah. It's not regarding the surgeons or the ophthalmology, but it's the spirit of Brazilian. The Brazilian people they are amazing. It's the local season of the Brazilian behavior. So I love here, but I also love the Latin America surgeons as well, because we share the same Latin blood, I would say.
Sure, absolutely. And one of my favorite things with the Brazilian cataract refractive meeting was the end of the day after all the lectures. Then they have a live band playing and dancing and party time, and I right there at the convention center.
Yeah,
it was amazing. I had such a great time.
And we try to join to connect fun, pleasure, and learning. So this is an unbeatable mix.
Now, one important thing that you emphasize a lot is efficiency, because I am blown away. I'm surprised. There are some Brazilian surgeons who do hundreds of thousands of surgeries in their career. And so efficiency, I thought I was pretty efficient until I saw videos of Brazilian surgeons. That's a whole nother level of efficiency.
Yeah.
And I think it's important we have to become efficient at surgery, because there's going to be an increasing demand with our aging population for more and more cataract surgery.
And you know, it's funny, because some could have some prejudice about these kind of high volume surgeries. But on the other hand, I went after these doctors. I have great doctors in my team, like, you know him, Dr. Neto Rosatelli, which is a worldwide global known name, Francisco Porfirio. They make more than 100 surgeries a day easily. But the thing is that in terms of the perception of our class, you know, these doctors, they have to be highly perfect in their skills, because they have to rely on a very advanced technique. And you know, I went to see Dr. Porfirio and Dr. Rosatelli by myself, not only in the videos, because I wanted to, like, you know, I watch Formula One, I love Formula One, but I went to 10 years, I was a doctor in Formula One, and when I was there, I saw something else, something very different from what we see on TV. So I went to watch their surgeries, and it's a whole other level. Like, I watched the perfection of Formula One in their hands. So it's a different craft, it's a different skill. It, you know, the first time I went to watch Dr. Rosatelli's surgeries, I spent a whole morning there. And when I left, I was heading home, and I thought, I cannot describe what I saw. I have to go back once again, because it's not compared to what I do. It's right. Something else in terms of perfection, you know? So like I love Formula One. So like Formula One, it's not about high speed. You could crash with high speed, have problems.
Right.
And why do they achieve that performance? Because they aim for perfection. And it's a whole other game in terms of perfection. I consider myself, and you are as well, perfectionist. But I saw another level. And it's fantastic. Yeah. It's a whole different experience.
No, it really is. I just, like in Formula One, every gram, forget kilogram, every gram counts on that car, right? But same with the surgery, with these very, very efficient surgeons, every second in the surgery counts. And there's no wasted movements at all. Yeah. And the level of precision is unbelievable. The other thing that you realize is they have a, like you told me about being in the zone, right? Being in a state of flow. They're in that state of flow where they're hyper aware. So the surgeon like that can detect a slight change very early and very subtly, and that can change the outcome of the surgery.
And you know, as I love Formula One since I was a kid, I realized my dream by being a doctor at Formula One for 10 years since Ayrton Senna's time. And what I saw there, that was not driving. That was another thing that I cannot describe, because I'm a driver, you are a driver. I can even consider it's like a pilot. But what I saw there was a level of perfection and extreme performance that it's another planet. So in regards of high performance surgeries, as we call it in Brazil, it cannot be compared with what I do. It's another game. And it's so interesting because I didn't went there to learn surgery by the itself. I went there to see another game. It was fantastic. I could extract one or two or three things for my as lessons for my performance, but I cannot be compared to them. So it's amazing.
Yeah, but you're right, though. We can learn from even those incredible drivers with incredible surgeons. Yeah. We can learn little pearls from them.
Yeah, I think we can
learn the Rossatelli spin that nucleus.
And the lesson is there's always something to be improved. Even when you think you reached your best, but it's very, very healthy to visit other doctors, as you show in your videos. We learn from everyone.
Right. Yeah, so much to learn there. So in your situation here, you're at the opposite end of the spectrum. When you have a young resident that you're training, they don't have any efficiency, any, it's the beginning of the learning curve. How do you get them past the challenging parts? We talked about this in the past. I have a video of yours that you sent me about the state. One is the state of flow, but the other one is the learning curve. And the frustration barrier and then the passion barrier. Tell me about this.
Yeah. As I mentioned, I want to make this hands-on course here with some new approaches. And one of them, which is I regard as very important, is the mental control. Mm-hmm. I will train with them here. And I'm going to spoil some of the sauce that I'm going to introduce here. There will be a mental training as well. I do meditation for about 15 years now. I'm very good at meditation. I can meditate walking. I can meditate in the plane with kids crying elsewhere, and I start meditating. And it's a tool used by high performance athletes and, you know, in the business, for example. So I'm going to introduce meditation. And also there's another tool that I'm sure you know, which is called visualization, which is also used by high performance athletes. For example, as I love it, Formula One drivers, they close their eyes in their seat, in their lounge, in their home, and they do the entire lap with their eyes closed, like holding the wheel, the steering wheel. And they shift the gears and they do the exact same timing of a real lap.
Wow. And it's visualized in their mind.
It's fantastic. You can search in YouTube. There's an example of Fernando Alonso. There is from Verstappen and other drivers, all of them, they do train this. Because it's a tool that is practiced not only by Formula One drivers, but Michael Phelps has a great story about his winning in Olympic race, in which his eyeglasses, his eye protection got fogged, and as he finished, he got into his training mode as he was performing, and at the end of the race, he finished first, breaking the record. And they asked him, what happened and what did he do? And he said, I had already done this in his visualization so many times. So it's a mental game. It's a mental game, absolutely. And I have no doubt that it's all about our training as well. You know that there are so many obstacles. There are anxiety, fears, some things that could be solved with mental training. I've been doing this with my fellows for some years now, some of them. I have a huge team in Brazil as well, and I do it one time or another, but here I'm going to introduce it as a regular practice.
Yeah, that's so smart. I think we all do this. Even now, the night before some challenging surgeries, I'll lie in bed, close my eyes, and visualize that surgery and what I'm going to do next. I do the same thing even now.
Yeah, and you know, there are studies that say that your mind cannot differentiate from what it imagines and what is real. So as long as you detail your visualization as much as you can in your mind, it's going through the same process as the real one. So we have this software and hardware.
Yeah, built in the brain. Yeah.
We should use it more. So many athletes, so many sports areas, they use this technique. It's not mine. It's an old technique, actually, but I don't see it being introduced in our area. I mean, in a scale. I'm sure some doctors do, but I would use it as a regular training tool in this facility as well.
Yeah, I think that's important. All these things are just, and it's funny how we do these things already as experienced surgeons, but some of the young surgeons may not realize this.
Yeah, it's a very interesting chapter to study, visualization. There is psychology involved, there is neuroplasticity involved, there's so many things, and I'm going to introduce it here because it's very important. As you mentioned, young doctors, they get lost in the intricacies of the procedure. So as long as you provide them with tools, I'm sure that, you know, surgery starts here. Our hands.
It starts with the mind, of course.
Yeah. So many doctors, they think they, as long as they repeat the same process, it will be enough. I think it's important. But actually, you can also train your mind. Why not?
No, I think it's absolutely, you have to. You have to. So now in your training for your hands-on, you're teaching mostly phaco chop. Are you also teaching MSICS? Because I think one of the important things in the USA, we do not do a good job of teaching MSICS. I used to teach every resident how to do it when I did it, but I retired from teaching last year. And I think the number of American ophthalmologists who don't know MSICS is too high.
You're absolutely right. And actually, here in Brazil, we lack this awareness as well, especially because in Brazil, and I would say Latin America, we had so many hard cataracts because of the access of the population is not that easy. They tend to develop the cataracts and try to solve it too late. And doctors could use and should use this technique as long as they have the proper training. I have some doctors in my team that have great technique with micro-incisional surgeries. So, for example, like I said, Dr. Rosatelli, and I'm certainly, I will introduce this training. It's very important also in terms of healthcare for our society. We have to have surgeons with very good skills for this kind of very hard cataract, so I would say.
Yeah, today's video on cataract, Coach, is a very elderly patient where the surgeon on a very dense cataract is attempting phaco using a MyLoop device. It breaks the bag. It's just a huge mess. And I looked at that case and I thought, we could have done MSICS and been done in a few minutes.
I watched this video. I saw the MyLoop and the complication, and it was posted today.
Yeah.
And I was also a little bit shocked. And I totally agree with you that as surgeons, we must have several techniques and skills.
Right.
And on the other hand, I think you in U.S., you don't have the kind of hard cataract we do have in Brazil. our kind of hard cataracts are like M&M or something like that. I don't have a right comparison, but they're very tricky, very hard cataracts. It's a big deal here.
Yes, I've seen many of them at like the live surgery that we saw at the Brasco meeting. The cataracts are completely opaque. There's zero red reflex, and the cataracts are as hard as rocks.
Yeah, that's it. It's a challenge. It's a challenge here in Brazil. For example, as you mentioned, we have high volume surgeons with because of the population aspects here in Brazil. And in these campaigns that are held by government and also some initiatives, they face lots of these kind of cataracts. There are also expeditions, you know, to Amazon rainforest areas in which they have access to even more challenging cases. We at the University, Federal University of São Paulo, Unifesp, which is very near here, we do have expeditions to Amazon rainforest to reach even indigenous people there in order to solve the cataract problems. They don't have the access for, I would say, healthcare. So there are expeditions planned by not only institutions but also the army in Brazil that gives the support as well.
Oh, that's fantastic to get access to more people to help more people.
It's amazing experience, Uday. So many foreign doctors, very highly known doctors, they join in this because it's a life-changing experience, I would say, in terms of you helping people that they don't have. I saw people that never saw a doctor at the age of 70. No doctor at all at the age of 70, because not because they are healthy, but they don't have healthcare.
No access.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's really amazing. Now, switching gears here a little bit, one of the most challenging things, I think, for an established surgeon, let's say you have a surgeon who's already been in practice a while, the surgeon's doing divide and conquer, and that surgeon says, I want to learn how to do phaco chop. How can I learn without going to a classroom? How do I learn on my own how to do phaco chop?
Well, I think this is an issue that I'm very, you know, as I mentioned, so many things that I do in my practice came from being an admirer of Formula One. And what I loved in Formula One in terms not only the technology of the cars and the teams, but also I love the high-performance pilots, the drivers. And what I'm amazed, and I try to use them as an example. They are very highly skilled in so many techniques in terms of being a driver, being an aggressive driver. They have to rely on knowing so many different cars, different setups. He can drive your car in a very aggressive manner. He drives a Formula One, which has a 1,000 horsepower. They don't rely on one specific technique or one specific machine. You can give them anything, and as professional as they are, they will throw in all the techniques they have. So this is something that I followed in my life. I tried, as you do, and I see so many very highly regarded doctors that I follow. I love to have to learn all the skills I can, so I have the tools, I have the ability to solve any problem the way I want, use not only in terms of technique, but also the choppers, different techniques. So that's what I love. And so I think for a doctor which uses only one technique, and I do it in my team with my fellows, I try them to be open to use different machines, different techniques, mm-hmm. different IOLs, because, you know, in this area in which we say about premium IOLs or premium surgeries, I have no doubt that we as surgeons, we are the difference. We are the real difference. We have to stand up and be above the IOLs, the machines, etc. But we have to invest on ourselves. As much as we invest in our techniques, having great skills, I'm sure the difference will be the surgeon.
Right, for sure. Yeah, you want to have as many tools as you can in your toolbox, and then as many skills as you can learn, the techniques in your skill set.
Yeah, as you mentioned, there are some ways for one to expand his arsenal. Today, it's so much easier than we came from the pre-2000 era, in which access to information and knowledge and techniques was so hard. And now you have, well, I would say, one is not limited today by the offerings of how to expand his techniques, because in terms of having sources of information, different instruments, we have them all very easily. So, of course, you can have something like a mentor or a colleague that has these skills, and you have to be close with them, or a training facility as well. But the most important thing is it starts with the surgeon himself. He has to have this drive to go after these skills, which is very important.
Yeah, you have to have the desire, the drive to go and learn it. I mean, the resources we have now are incredible. I remember in like the late 1990s, we had to go find Osher's videotapes to learn a technique.
Yeah.
And then you have to borrow this videotape, watch it on a videotape player in low definition, and try to make it out. Now you can watch on your phone in high definition anywhere on the planet. You can learn any technique. It's all available.
And it's happening, you know, as your channel, it's an example, like other doctors' channels. I'm sure the doctors are much better than 15 years, 20 years ago, because of the resources they do have, like your channel. Everyone who wants to improve, they will have the means for that.
Right. So if you have the drive and the desire and determination, you can certainly learn all these techniques. It's like, you know, a couple of years ago, this is how I learned DMEC. I learned DMEC surgery by watching videos and then talking to colleagues and saying, okay, I'm going to try it.
Yeah. I think by exposing, like you do, and other doctors as well, by exposing this scenario, you really make something tick inside the doctors. And it's more, very important to provoke him out of the comfort zone. You know, I was invited for the Brazilian Ophthalmic Society, the SBO, Sociedade Brasileira de Oftalmologia. Last year, it held a 100-year commemorative congress, and I was invited in Rio de Janeiro to give the opening speech. I was very honored to be invited, of course. And they gave me the freedom to choose the topic, and you know, I chose the discomfort zone. That was the name of my lecture, because you know, I'm addicted to the discomfort zone. Everything that makes me comfortable, it really bothers me. So I'm always going after something that I don't know, that I don't have, you know, the ability. So being in the comfort zone, I use only one technique. I use only one equipment. It's something that bothers me so much. And I try to bring some playful aspect for the doctors. And I challenge them, pushing them, but I try to show them how playful it should be, open to learn something. From very early age in my youth, I wanted to be young forever. You know, Uday, I wanted to find the recipe for the eternal youth. And I kept observing, and I said, is it money? Is it power? And you know, I found out that being in the discomfort zone, reaching something that I don't know and trying to learn something new, made me like a boy again.
It's fantastic. The curiosity, the learning. Yeah.
I feel like I'm a kid again. You know, if I now in this hub, in this my experience, companies that come in with new equipments, new devices, and they want bring me and doctor, let's plan something to do with the community or some study. And I play like a kid, you know, and how much, there's no price on this. I feel like a kid. I'm 60 now, but I feel like a kid.
Yeah. It's that learning. It's that when you learn something new, the excitement of learning that. But I like the way you put it. So it's more than just curiosity that you have. You actually want to seek out discomfort.
Yeah, you know, every time I'm too comfortable in somewhere, I feel like an old man, you know. It's for real. It's for real. And you may seek inside you. You feel that. I know you. You feel that too. And every time someone brings you a new technique, something that amazes you, I want to study this. Bring me more. Or I have to go after this. You know, this is youth. This is youth. I remember very clearly. So it's precious. It's so precious. And I try to bring this to the doctors. And you know, last week, today, four doctors cried in front of me at different times last week. And it's a common happening in my life. Last week, four doctors came to me and cried for different reasons. And I know that I have this kind of approach in terms of touching them, in terms of not only regarding the technique or the surgery or the knowledge, but I like to provoke them in terms of, where are we going? What are you doing with your life? You know, it's very easy for us to fall on a trap of being like a labor force in ophthalmology. And right. It gives me shivers when I think of that. Our specialty is so beautiful. It's so rich. And it's very easy for ourselves to create a trap in which we aim for the comfort zone. And, you know, comfort zone is where the dreams, or they do die.
Mm.
You know, the this comfort zone is where everything happens. So I look, I use so all my effort, my daily effort, looking for this comfort zone.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Because if you're just doing the same thing in your comfort zone every week, day in, day out, it gets a little monotonous. It gets a little bit boring. You feel stagnant. You're not learning anything new.
Yeah.
But when you're in the discomfort zone and you have that curiosity and you're seeking out new knowledge and new learning, there's an excitement there.
I know not all doctors can do that, but you cannot sell 100% of your time just to be like a workforce. The Pareto rule is very useful for that. You take 80% to do your chores, your usual things, but 20% of your time should be dedicated to the unknown. The unknown will push you to something always challenging, always new. Every doctor, even this one who is in the comfort zone, he got to this point because someday he was in the discomfort zone. And if you see that, he was in a precious position in which this discomfort zone brought you to where you are now. What did you do with this part, this discomfort zone? Did you kill it?
Right.
Or can you maintain, with, I would say, 80, 20, 20% of your effort, your energy, your time, you dedicate to something very precious that will pay off and bring you joy and new frontiers for the next 5 or 10 years?
Yeah, I think that's important too, to keep learning new things and keep giving yourself new challenges. Like you set up the My Experience Center. Jess, you said this opened within the last month.
Yeah.
This must have been many years in the planning.
You're right. You're right. I'm very patient guy, you know, because maybe because of my Japanese origins, but I don't do anything in the short term. All my plans are at least 3, 5, or 10 years. So this facility, it's been some years now in the making.
Yeah, but look at the impact it's going to have.
Yeah.
You're going to change. You're going to help so many surgeons who will then go out and do thousands of surgeries each. Yeah. This your center here within a few years is going to help basically 1 million patients.
Yeah, I'm a selfish guy, you know. I built it for me to play here with and bring in so many colleagues. I love to make connections. I love that. I'm addicted to it. So instead of traveling so much as I do, going after the colleagues, I built something to bring them here. So I live very near here. I come walking every morning. Yeah, and now I'm receiving these colleagues here, and it's a playful time moment of my life.
So tell me about what programs you're going to start having now in your center.
Sure. Actually, as I have a huge network here in Brazil and Latin America, I'm going to bring in not only training for cataract, but also other areas. For example, in February, we will start training regarding OCT for retina, which will be led by Dr. Japiasu. Dr. Japiasu is a very highly regarded retina professor here in Brazil. He was the president of the last retina meeting that was held in Rio de Janeiro. And we will be doing a hands-on in OCT with theory, and also we will have all the equipment of OCT in the Brazilian market here. I do have also in my team Dr. Victor Sidental, which is a worldwide name in terms of glaucoma. We are already setting up MIGS training here also. So actually I have all the relationships in terms of very good names for training in every area. also colleagues from Latin America. I'm planning with Dr., as I mentioned, Dr. Saldivar, to bring in a part of his ICL training here. And that's what I love to do. So many trainings. And, you know, Uday, there's a part of my story that it's for another talk with some beer and caipirinha. I was not supposed to be a doctor. I want to be an engineer. So that's why I have so many different interests in my life. I wanted to be an engineer. I come from a very humble family, and I worked with my family at the streets selling vegetables. And when I was a kid, I wanted so badly to be an engineer, and my dad gave a choice to me. I could be a doctor or a doctor. There were these two choices because he wanted so badly to have a doctor among his siblings. And I was chosen. I was the chosen one. When I got into my medical degree, I wanted so badly to be an engineer that I had a startup company in the early 2000s because of the dot-com. Sure. And yeah, I had a great adventure at the time. I ran this startup for about 8 years. I worked with so many companies like local HP, Apple, other companies, telecom companies. I really released my desire for working in this area. As in parallel, I was a cataract doctor as well. But the startup crashed magnificently, but it gave me first. I let this page to be turned in my life, but in the other hand, it gave me so much experience in dealing with people, in dealing with companies, corporations, and I saw so many other things in my life. I had my MBA at that time. I was invited to be a professor at the MBA as well. So when I turned again my life to performing just cataract about 15 years ago, I came in with other skills, not only cataract surgeon, which I love to do, but I have so many other interests. And in this facility, as I mentioned, I'm going to start other parts that I love so much. I don't show it off, but I'm 60 now. I can show some things that people don't know about me. Like, I love business. I love marketing. I love these crazy things. And I'm going to be doing some classes on these subjects, not only with me, but I also have great relationships with other people, very highly skilled in this area because of my interest. You know, this morning came a local company came here to know the place, but I presented them with an AR, augmented reality and virtual reality solution that I am part of. I show them off this device, which is a goggle with augmented reality, with some images for training surgeons, and they were amazed. And these kind of things I love to do. I see myself as a hub now, and so many things that I did and I don't show. Now, again, I'm 60. I want to show all the toys and things that I do.
That's amazing. You have such a huge interest. Obviously, surgeon, professor, businessman. You're obviously with the MBA, you're expert in marketing, and obviously doing a startup like you're doing now, engineering.
Star Wars fan,
and F1 doctor, which I didn't even realize. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I was a doctor at the ophthalmology team, looking for the drivers and Formula One team as well. And you know that I have a fellowship training here in Sao Paulo, and it has just opened in 11 cities in Brazil. It's the largest My learning fellowship is the largest one in Brazil. I just partnered with a medical institution, a very, very big medical institution in Brazil named Idomed. They are controlled by a company that is in the stock market. And they partnered with me, and now we are opening the fellowship in 11 cities in Brazil, because Brazil is a continental country. So so many doctors came to São Paulo just because of this training, and now I'm offering in elsewhere in Brazil.
Wow. Tell me about this fellowship. This is anterior segment cataract, refractive. What's involved?
Well, I have two, you know, I could keep, we could keep on talking about some hours here, because I do so many things I love to do. You know, when I was head of the cataract surgery in Unifesp, which is a major institution in Brazil, I was head of cataract there for about 5 years. And one of the things I did at that time, which was from 2011 up until 2016, you know, I joined two different divisions, cataract and refractive surgery, because I envisioned that it is the same thing. So we pioneered this effort, and we transformed two different divisions, refractive and cataract, into one, which is now named Optica Cirúrgica, Surgical Optics, which joins cataract and refractive. Because I look for the discomfort zone. Now, as I train my fellows in my facility, I have a facility here in São Paulo, in these surgical optics, so many doctors, so many fellows, residents, they wanted to join in São Paulo. That's why I brought this effort to partner with some different institutions elsewhere, to bring the same knowledge, the know-how, the same method of joining cataract and refractive to, you know, it's the same thing now, it's one thing only. The other thing that, you know, I have so many things that I didn't spread the word, but I'm opening here. You know, one of the guests of your podcast was Christos Infantidis.
Sure.
Yeah. And I follow that. I follow him very closely. And he held a panel at AAO last year, and then in ASCRS in San Diego in May, and then again now in San Francisco with the AAO. And the panel was named, "Is It Time for the Middle Segment Surgeon?" Very interesting.
Because
I'm a retina guy. In the early times, I performed retinal surgery from 92 up until 97, and I was delighted to, in my head, to go only after cataracts. But for one time, I performed retinal surgery with cataracts, and I also went to neuro-ophthalmology at that time. I am a little bit lost and crazy, but I did that. And you know, the retina skills, I miss so much, because as I abandoned retinal surgery, I felt that I made a mistake. I could have coupled these skills, and I really left out. After seeing the panel with this topic, "Is it time for the middle segment surgeon?" You know, I'm starting the first ever, I presume, the middle segment surgery fellowship here in Brazil. I'm releasing this news now. I've been working for a year now with the institution here in São Paulo, which is a big one, and I brought in this option, which would be a worldwide innovation, inspired, and I want to be very clear here, inspired by this very enlightened panel that was held by these guys, Dr. Infantidis and his group. And I want to stress out how they inspired. But anyways, I'm starting this fellowship, the middle segment surgeon.
So tell me about the middle segment. So what all does this entail?
Well, I see so many doctors that do have this skill that I regret so much having left. Being a posterior segment surgeon, I wouldn't say dealing with retina pathologies, but as an anterior segment surgeon, sometimes you should have the skill of doing a very nice vitrectomy. You see the surgeries of Steven Safran. Sorry. You see this?
Yes, Steven Safran, who has to, like, for a very complicated anterior segment reconstruction, he has to do a pars plana vitrectomy.
Yeah. And this is a skill that could be and should be taught for doctors wanting this complete skill. Nowadays, they have to build this skill by themselves. They have to go after the pieces and build the skill. But as an institution, why not? Can we deliver this kind of training? So that's the purpose. It will be, I would say, surgical optics fellowship. sorry.
Surgical optics fellowship. So obviously including everything related to the lens, but also if need be, posterior capsule and even, you know, anterior hyaloid face, anterior vitreous. Like if we're going to do a Yamane procedure, you need to do a good anterior vitrectomy.
That's it. I would say the whole core and the periphery of the vitreous, not relating to, I would say, retinal detachment surgeries or anything like that, but having the skills to perform a very complete and nice vitrectomy is a skill that we all miss. Especially we had so much mileage, but if you sorry,
I should become your fellow because I didn't do any retina training. And today, if I have a patient who needs a good pars plana vitrectomy, I refer them to a vitretinal colleague.
Yeah,
don't have this training.
Yeah, and you know it's funny because so many veterans are saying the same to me, and maybe I will submit myself to this position to be a fellow as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be a good fellow, but I don't speak Portuguese. It's going to be the tough part.
You know, Portuguese is not that hard. I would say that with caipirinha, for those who are not acquainted, it's a very typical drink in Brazil that I know someone that likes very much.
Right. All good stuff. But anyway, I want to thank you. What a great hour talking to you. You've got such a neat program here. If you please give me the links, I'll include it in the podcast for the new My Experience Center, which is amazing. Next time I'm in Sao Paulo, I really have to come visit you. I want to come learn in your lab. We'll have a great time.
That's a deal. Thank you so much.
I'll bring the pizza. You bring the young doctors, and we'll go into our discomfort zone together.
Sure. You being a beacon for my career and so many colleagues now worldwide. Thank you so much today. Thank you so much for the invitation.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for enjoying that podcast with me. I trust that you learned a lot. We're going to have another great podcast next week. Every week, a new podcast, and we're going to keep that up for the whole year, and you know we love consistency. Remember, you can also enjoy this podcast on YouTube if you're listening to it on a podcast audio series. It's on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google, anywhere you find a podcast, you're going to find the Cataract Coach Podcast. Search for it. Please tell your friends. We need to grow this even more, and give me suggestions for future speakers. Again, we're going to do one a week, so we'll have 52 speakers coming in 2024. Well, again, our purpose of becoming better ophthalmologists, better surgeons, and happier people. I'll see you next week.